Why am I getting nervous?
No, man. Don't be nervous. Jesus Christ, man. This will be flayed. Okay. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Pear Pod. Thank you for listening. Thank you for supporting the last episode. Very much appreciate you. Today, we have our second return guest for the podcast. Delighted to be joined by music artist Ev Wild.
What's happening?
How are you, brother?
Thank you very much for having me back.
I appreciate it, man. Number one, you were up for the fights last night. You were watching them. What are weekends typically looking like for you now?
Some weekends I've got gigs. Other weekends I don't have a lot of gigs. So mainly just spending time with family, bro. Eating nice Chinese and making some good memories.
Yeah, do you have is that obviously like a stark decline, like difference versus like, let's say 5 years ago? Like, yeah, you enjoying the refreshing weekends now?
Yeah, 100%. I kind of partied for a good 10 years of my life that I am happy to see the back of. But I tell you what, I had fun. I had a lot of fun.
And I think if you max it out, you can look back and be like, I did. I'm not missing out on anything. I did it all. Do you know what I mean?
No, definitely not. And you know what? If I do have an L blowout every now and then, probably once or twice a year, but that's it.
That's plenty, like.
Too much.
And I feel like it almost makes it more enjoyable now when you have something to celebrate. Like some of the lads are like, they have a kid or they're pregnant or something. You go out and you meet them up. But it's mad that like, as you get older, I'm seeing the lads less and less. Do you know what I mean?
Of course.
You see them, you have to like into a WhatsApp group. Who can do June 19th? Do you know what I mean?
And it's so hard, isn't it? It's so hard that everybody actually to find the time to get out, to get out. Everybody has kids now. Everybody's buying gaffs. It's like, fuck, we're past that stage of youth. That's gone.
You know, when you're younger and you're like, oh no, lads. Like every weekend, like, what are you doing Thursday? What are you doing Friday? What are you doing Saturday? You've nothing else to do but just go out and see the boys. Like, it's mental how it changes.
Hanging around the chipper with your hands in your jocks and smokes.
The golden era, man.
Stop. Good times.
Sharing an amber leaf, just like scraping the bottom of it. Like,
wouldn't have changed it for the world, though.
Indeed. Last time we spoke, you were my second guest I had in Ireland. So that's over 2 years ago now. And at the time, you were rising through your music career. You were still working construction and still working after hours making music, like working away in the studio.
Yeah.
How was that? You had just had the studio, it had just been built. Have you found that's been a huge plus for you now?
Yeah, of course. The studio is such a benefit to my life. Mm. Just having your own, yourself, your content creator kind of thing in the background. So you want your own space to work. You need your own space to work. And having that recording studio just out the back garden has been a blessing in disguise.
And has the work ethic changed, or is your schedule still similar?
To be honest with you, since I last spoke to you, I was going from the day job to the studio to the day job to the studio kind of thing. It's still the same. It hasn't changed. I was out of the day job for about 2 years, but I've done a little bit of traveling, and then I came back and kind of rode the wave, and now I'm back in the day job and kind of trying to get out back on my own feet now into my own house and stuff. So yeah, I'm back flat out, flat to the fucking mat, to be honest with you.
Is that how you like it?
It's kind of, do you know what? That's the way my brain has always worked. I've always been flat to the mat. I suffer with a skin condition called psoriasis. Most people do suffer with it, actually, that I've found over the years. Most of it is gained from stress. I'm a stressful old man, trust me, but it's because of me... I'm just constantly on the go. Mm-hmm. Constant.
What do you do? What helps you with your stress? What kind of things do you do to kind of help alleviate it?
Making music.
Yeah.
Making music. That's like kind of like people have their things. They put on their running shoes and go out for a run. I've just been so invested in sound and frequency and stuff. So it's what makes me happy. And I know it makes a lot of people happy, but...
Isn't it great that... I was actually talking to my missus about this, about being able to like... Number one, know what your passion is. And then number two, like see an avenue for yourself to be able to pursue your passion and like make a career out of it. Like that's a privilege, you know?
Of course. Like someone said to me before, Ev, you are an artist. And I said, do you fuck off? I'm not a fucking artist. But when I actually look back and think, yeah, making electronic music is not picking up an instrument and playing an instrument, because trust me, I haven't got that I'm not musically talented like that. But I have the ability to look on a screen and know how to create sound and stuff. So I would class myself as an artist now.
Anyone that makes something that evokes an emotion from someone is an artist. You know what I mean?
Course.
I think that's what it is. And like that can be conventional painting and stuff like that. Man, I get moved by fucking podcast episodes.
Yeah.
And it's wild. Like not even my one, but just like ones I listen to. Like I could give you five or six that I've listened to and be like, man, I learned a lot from that episode. And that's what art is. Do you know what I mean?
That's it.
So I mentioned to you there, like I want to start having people back on to the podcast, because an hour, sometimes when you're doing a podcast for an hour together, you
you learn about each other, and then about 40 minutes in, you're nearly done. I'm like, fuck, man, I feel like I'm just scraping the surface. Yeah. So I'm trying to have more people back. And one of the big things that I saw on your Instagram that I was like, I want to have this, I want to talk about this experience for you. You were on holidays, I can't remember where you were, but you talked about an interaction you had with someone on the beach there. He had a conversation with you about his own business, his own life, and how it was affected by COVID. Could you just tell that story for us?
Yeah, okay? I was out on a walk one morning. I kind of, when I'm away and stuff, I do like to have a little moment on my own and just to try and reflect of what's going on in life at the minute and stuff. So I was out on a walk one morning on the beach. I think it was about 7 o'clock in the morning. I'm an early riser. Even when I'm on holidays, I'm an early riser. My brain just wants to wake up and I cannot go back to sleep. So I got up, went out on a walk, and I met this bloke, Neilston, on a beach. I think his name was Neilston, yeah. He was asleep. He looked fairly rough, to be honest with you. And just automatically, I was like, fuck me. I put myself into his shoes, kind of. I couldn't even do that, but I tried to. I went over, I gave him €30, I think it was, and I had a good chat with him. He was a construction worker over there, and he lost everything, lost his wife and all due to COVID. And I was like, this could happen to anybody. I'm a construction worker. I work day to day. I work my bollocks off day to day just for a fucking wage. And this can happen to anybody, any of us, and it can happen overnight. And that's what's happened for that man over there. But I kind of like, even if I'm driving down the road and stuff and I see someone, I kind of try and put myself into somebody else's shoes, because when you're out on a walk, if you're up the mountains or you're in town, there's all these people walking past you. Everybody suffers with their own shit mentally and you don't actually know it. It's silent. You can't see it.
Especially on, we're on Thomas Street here, and I'll obviously walk up and down here. I try to do a lap every like 2 or 3 hours just to refresh the brain or whatever.
Yeah.
And just even walking through the park, like you see like lads dealing drugs, you see like drug addicts, you see people that are like begging for money and stuff like that. And I'm quite an empathetical person, I think it is. And I kind of automatically, I'm like, fuck man, like how does someone get to that point? And you're like, how can I, number one, like how could I even help that? But just feeling the emotion of that. And does that help you? Do you feel an extra layer of like gratitude and perspective when you talk to someone like that? Does it, as soon as you leave that conversation, do you go, Jesus, man, the things I'm complaining about now?
100%.
Yeah, you know?
100%. At the end of the day, we are all going through our own hard shit in our own heads, which is extremely hard to deal with in our own heads. But when you see someone else that's going through a lot worse than you, it really does open your eyes to say, fuck me, I don't have it as hard as I think I do.
Yeah, man. And you have, obviously with people who have like their own struggles, whether that's with addiction or whatever it is, I feel like people who've gone through something like that, like addiction or anything like that, you can empathize so much more with these people. And that's probably like a lot of people, especially people who are more well off, haven't had any issues. They probably wouldn't empathize that bloke. They probably walk past them and be like, fucking addict.
I am the working class. So that's what I came from. I came from working every single day in my life to, if I ever wanted anything, I'd never had anybody to just open their wallet and go, you know what, there you go. I never had that. I had to work. I worked every single day in my life, and I still do for things that I want, like most of us out there. But there are people out there that get things handed to them and they probably don't respect it as much as others. But
what do you think he got out of that? Did he say, like, it's mental to just have someone come and have a conversation with me? You know?
To be honest with you, I hadn't got any money at the start and had about 25, 30 minute conversation with him, and he was just fucking, do you know what? It just it opened my eyes because he was involved in construction, and I know me, I'm in construction, and I know what, it hit home, like, I had a 20-minute, 30-minute conversation with him. I had no money on me at the stage. So I walked back to the room and I got a good bit of cash out of the room. I went back to him and I gave it to him. And I didn't give it to him. I know I made a video out of it. Probably was the worst thing to do was to make a video out of it, because I didn't want a publicity stunt out of it. I just wanted to help someone.
See, I have a conflicting idea with that of like, you know, you see lads who he'll video like giving away money for the homeless or whatever on YouTube, whatever that is. The difference I have with that is, for me anyway, when I see that, that would encourage me to be like, fuck man, you know, next time I'm in a situation like that, like it would make me think about, if I saw someone in that situation, geez, you know, I'm fucking going to go over and have a chat with this bloke. Do you know what I mean? And like, I understand what you're saying, that some people can kind of look at that as, oh, he's trying to make a video out of it. I know that's not the case. Yeah. Most people don't. I understand there's people that do that. But I feel like on the other side, some young lad who sees that watching on your channel is like, fuck man, like next time you see someone, don't just be like, ah, fucking shit one for him. Be like, what can I do to fucking help this bloke? He's a human, I'm a human.
100%. You know? Like I remember back from when I was a kid, this is a good trait that I've taken from my father. this is a good trait I've taken from my father as well as DJing and music. When my dad used to take us into town, my mom and dad were never really together when I was a kid. They split up early, young. So my dad used to take us out on a Saturday or Sunday. And we'd be walking around town, and I always watched my dad. He's the most generous bloke ever. He'd put his hand in his pocket and it'd be £20 notes coming out to the homeless. He always, always helped the homeless. And I was like, you know what? That's a fucking good bloke for doing that to somebody, because you don't know what, again, you don't know what's going on in their own head and what has happened in their life to get themselves into this position. So,
and it's easy to paint everyone with the same brush that you see someone, anyone that's begging, you just presume, ah, fucking, you know, it's going to spend the money on drugs or whatever it is. Like, you just don't, it's so wrong to paint everyone with that one brush. You've no idea the situation people
fortunately,
are in.
Like. Fortunately, you can't look at everybody like that, because it's not fucking drinking drugs.
Yep.
Some people, it's gambling. You know what I mean? Other people, it's alcohol. Other people, it's
unlucky.
Other people, it's unlucky. You know they lost their whole fucking life and their family over COVID.
And you have a gig, you have a job, COVID comes, construction's gone. There isn't just some people don't have rainy day funds, stuff like that. The mortgage comes out, you have rent, and suddenly you're like, I don't have any money. You're out. You're out. Do you know what I mean? If you don't have family to lean on or something like that, like, that's the reality, and it can be that quick, you know?
Certainly opens your eyes when you've got a roof over your head and a warm bed to get into.
It's easy at the time. And like, I think the biggest thing you take out of that is just being grateful for the situation you have, you know?
Definitely.
Something that we kind of talked about a little bit, and this is kind of music industry in general, but specifically in like your game, like producing and stuff like that. When you're first starting, you kind of taught everything yourself. Do you know what I mean? You're working away on laptop or whatever it is. There never really seemed, or I don't know of, a camp or a community or a course you can do when you're younger to help collaborate with people, learn the art and stuff like that. And I know that's something you'd like to do in the future, is like have an option for kids or like young teenagers to come in and learn the craft and collaborate with people.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit more about that?
You know what? I got the last time I was speaking with you, I got signed with Universal and I got put into a couple of camps over in London, and I was like, fuck me, this is good, because you're put in a room with a lot of people that are doing the same work as you, and a lot of talented people come together and make magic very fucking quickly. Mm. Whereas when I'm at home in my own studio, it takes a long time sometimes to get tunes done, but when there's so many other people in the room creating the one art as you, it's a collaborative collective, you know what I mean? So if that even makes sense, but you don't have that here.
Yeah.
You honestly don't have it here. Well, you don't have it in the industry that I'm in. And I know for a fact in this country there are a lot of creative people.
Tons.
We're living in the Truman Show in Ireland. It's way too hard to break out of Ireland. So there's a lot of undiscovered talent that is happening in our country at the minute. And I want to try and create camps. I want to try and get 4 to 5 people into a music studio at least once a month. Make music and see what comes from it. Because at the end of the day, what happens when you collab, especially with art, you get fucking colour.
Facts, man. And you have... Yeah, another thing, like working around this area, like a lot of kids, like if you're not in school, and some lads don't go to school around here, they're doing fuck all.
You don't need to, bro. And that's the thing. I'm not saying you don't need to. You do need to. I was back to school every day with my ma. Yeah. My mom kind of same. My mom and dad split up when I was a kid, so I grew up with my mom. My mom was kind of like the father of the house as well as the mother. So, my ma bet us to school. Get into that school. You are not taking days off. So, but at the end of the day, that school never done anything for me. For what I want to learn in life, it never taught me construction or it never taught me music. And that's what I've done in my own fucking time. So
I was only saying to my missus there, apart from like the only thing really I got from school is interacting with like my mates. Obviously, my mates are now they're still my best friends they've had since school. But everything I got into was a college course that I did, that the whole school, when I went to the what's it fucking called? Like the life coach or whatever we have to tell you what courses to do.
Yeah.
I told them what I want to do. It's like media and like content, stuff like that. They were like, there isn't one of those in Ireland right now. And they were like, go to UCD, do arts or something like that. I would have wasted 4 years of my life, you know?
There you go. And that brings you right back to the question you just asked me. This country has got fuck all to offer for stuff like this. Excuse me, French, you're going to get a lot of it on the show.
Give me all the French.
But like, this country does not have the facilities to offer, especially for these music camps. A lot of these music camps are funded by big record labels and they are offering big money. You know, with the likes of me, I want to just find a studio that is a creative space that's not shitty and run down, that I can offer to other songwriters, artists and other producers just to come in and see what we make.
Yeah, man. And like, that's who knows? That's the biggest, like, you know, a lot of lads, getting into the studio for the first time, they might have been in the game 6-7 years before they get into an actual studio, and they've been doing everything off the laptop. And it can almost be a bit jarring to be like, fuck, I'm not even ready to be here. But if you could have a situation, like I remember in college when I was in, we had a tiny little TV studio that had two cameras and you could set up little like chat shows and stuff like that, like this. And I remember being like, man, it's not the Late Late Show. You know, you don't have to have all this crazy like lads on soundboards and all. You can make stuff yourself. And even that little thing was like a little eureka moment for me to be like, you don't need all this bullshit to do it. But as you said, like having the access to do that, like right now, if I was a lad who was working on fucking GarageBand or whatever on his laptop, there is nowhere for me to go. I can't go into fucking any record label and be like, hey, I want to make some music, you know?
And it's not even that. It's like, it's very hard to find the talent over here. Mm. I find it's very hard to find the talent. There is talent here though. And it's undiscovered, and I want to find it, because at the end of the day, who knows what can happen from it. And I know, like, even I was in a camp over here with Belt of Sony when they were first popping off. They made Make Me Feel Good. I got invited to a music camp with them. And bro, I sat down with one of the biggest songwriters in the world. I sat down with one of the biggest vocalists in the world now at the minute as well, Clementine Douglas, and created a tune. Created a tune, bro, in 5 minutes. I had 5 minutes to do it. Like, I had the instrumental. I caught her on the way out. I said, Clementine, please come in here. Just see what you can do with this, right? Because she had a song out with Shane Carter at the time. And I knew that the tone and the frequency from Clementine Douglas' vocal. I said, I want to work on a fucking tune with her. She is sick, right? And not that long later, Clementine Douglas makes a tune with Dom Dolla, Miracle Maker. I don't know if you know it.
No.
But, and then she made a tune with MK and Sonny Federa, asking and went fucking huge. And I knew it. I even said it to Belt as only. I said, wait and you see this girl, Clementine Douglas. She is sick. This was before she even came into the camp. And now look at her. She's huge. I've got an unreleased banger idea with her. Trust me, there is going to be a time that June sees the day. I just need to work on the portfolio a little bit more and get to that level and then go and offer it to her and say, let's get this show on the road.
Is that something that, like, are you sitting on, like, songs right now that you're like, fuck, man, this would be huge, but it's just not the right time? Like, is timing a part of it when you're thinking about putting out music?
I am sitting on a lot of music with a lot of big artists on my hard drive due to being working in these camps, but there's a lot of yes men, there's a lot of no men, and unfortunately, there's more no men than there is yes men. Mm. A lot of people think that they know what the next hit is, because they don't. Nobody knows what the next hit is until it's out there, and it is the hit. Yeah. That's when it's the hit. And for someone to think, and it's a hard one, because someone behind the scene could think that one person could say, oh, that's not the tune, but you know it is the tune.
Yeah.
You know?
In reality, no one fucking knows.
And trust me when I say this to you, Sam, I can't say who the tracks are with, because I don't want to be throwing people under the bus, but I've got tunes with big fucking artists and big Irish artists that will see the light of day someday, because they're tunes.
And what would you, like, at the time, back when, let's say you were 14, 15, and there was these kind of facilities available, like a fucking Carl Cox is running a fucking camp that you could go and do, do you feel like that would have been, it would have got you into the game probably 5 years earlier than you originally did, and maybe give you a little more of a kickstart, you know?
When I was 14, I was working on an illegal radio station.
I remember this, yeah.
Yeah. And sorry, getting back to the Carl Cox, and I'll go back into that now in a second. But to be honest with you, there was a music camps back when I was kids, but there was one of them was called Nightmaker Studios over in Swords, but it was expensive. I couldn't afford it.
Yeah.
Couldn't afford to get into it. But getting back to being on the illegal radio station on Thomas Street here, it was only down the road from here. I doing it.
Yes,
it's madness, bro. I only walked down this street for the first time on a weekend morning since the last time I was on that radio show. And I got the smell of hops.
Yeah, man.
That I have not smelt since I was a young boy.
And I swear to God, bro,
it brought back so many memories. I was a young boy. I was 14 years of age. I wanted to be a DJ. I wanted to chase a dream. And I was in an illegal radio station in town.
Spinning.
Bro, this is when Ireland was safe. It was safe for a kid to go into town every weekend. My ma let me get the bus in, bro. I earned the clothes in my ma's house every single week just to pay for the illegal radio station that I was on. It was 50 quid a month. And
even that's...
Yeah, I earned all the clothes in my ma's house just to pay for the radio station. But it's mad. I was just walking down here this morning. I was like...
Home.
fun getting old.
Man, that's another game altogether. Like, my missus loves that. When we walk down, I think it's specifically Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Fridays. They like particularly burn the hops on those days. Yeah. And it's just walking. I walk down past Guinness Arthur Gate every day, and the whiff coming down, it's like, there's nothing like that smell when you're walking down.
It's not even that, bro. It sticks to your clothes and all. I remember I used to come out of the radio show, it would be the smell of stale smoke and the smell of hops coming off your clothes. Yeah.
In the last like year or so, would you say, has there been any moments for you like creatively where you've been like maybe learned something new about music or creation or the direction you want your music to go? Has anything like that happened in 2024?
In the last year, to be honest with you, Sam, I've had probably the shittest year in my whole entire life. And that's just being quite honest with you. I'm not looking for sympathy, but I'm just telling you straight out. I had the worst year in my whole life. I got bad news and not personally, but I got bad news in my lifetime, and it just really opened my eyes and said, you know what? Music, it's there. I have to create a form of it. I'll tip away at it, but I need to spend time with family. So now is, from this day, from this month onwards, it's going to be this kickstart of everything for Elvewild again, because he has certainly disappeared. I've got a new release coming under Universal Records again. So things are starting to get back on track again, finally.
And as you mentioned there, it was May, I think, when we spoke last time. So it was just before your summer of touring.
Yeah.
And we kind of were speaking about that, and you were like, man, I can't fucking wait. Like, this is what I want to do for my life, you know, touring. And I want to ask you, number one, what was the experience like, potentially on the negative side? Like, you're quite a regimented person. Like, you're someone that likes his routine. And, it's quite a hectic schedule, traveling a lot, different beds, different hotel rooms, up late. Do you enjoy the experience of touring more than it was a negative?
I did. I enjoyed it. I definitely enjoyed it. I would have liked to make a lot more money out of it than I did. But, like, I enjoyed it. I kind of, with my mind frame, I definitely have ADHD. So my brain constantly wants to be on the go, whether it's traveling or not, and seeing different parts of the world, because I create a form of art I always think is fucking mad. How can me sitting in a studio that I built myself take me over to Greece for a fucking gig? I've never been to Greece before, but now I'm suddenly DJing in Greece on 3 days' notice. It was a crazy busy summer. It was great though.
Was there a particular gig you did where you were like, fuck, it kind of clicked today? Like, that was one that, like, even when you're just doing it, you're like, man, this one's a little bit special. Was there one that stood out to you?
You know what? Most of the gigs abroad are always kind of, they're always good. They're always busy. They're always, because people are on holidays. These holiday destinations are flooded. And once they hear like there's an Irish DJ, all the Irish are coming in. I know that it's the same with the English as well. If there's a well-known English DJ, all the English are coming in. So most gigs have been busy. Some of the best gigs that I've probably played have been home here on Irish soil. So yeah. There's one of them there, Temptation Festival, that one of my mates Seamus set up, and John, and that for me was a standout point to say, this is the moment you've been waiting for, because you're looking out and there's fucking 4,000 people in front of you and you're saying, this
mental, like,
that's what you want.
Exactly. That's probably what you were dreaming about when you're in your home studio. Like,
for the feeling that gives you, bro, I do it for free.
Money messing. Yeah, exactly. As you said, and this would be something probably on the other side of the camps, which is nice. Like, you can talk about the music creation with these young lads, but also the romanticized part of touring, where it is like, you know, this is the dream. You get there, it's all positives, it's all amazing. But there is that grind aspect to it as well. So you'd be able to also give that realistic side to it. It's like, you haven't made it when you're on tour, lads. You know what I mean?
No.
Like, this is a chance to build your brand, but it's not all just partying and moths and fucking DJing and living the dream.
If I had started going on tour, when I mean going on tour, getting booked for a lot of gigs abroad, but if I had started that and I would have been back in my partying days, drinking and out every weekend, it wouldn't have happened.
Yeah.
I would have been stuck in Malaga, or I would have been stuck in Greece in an airport, or, you know, or Magaluf, or, yeah. Do you know what I mean? But it started at the right time. I got off the drink, I got off the partying scene, which whatever came with the partying scene, and it was the best time for it.
Yeah.
Right now I think I'm at the strongest point of my life now, that I'm ready for everything to kickstart off again. It's like you go back to saying, and you're sleeping in shit hotel beds and you're this and that. It's like anything, you build your craft up, the better you get, the more money you'll get, with the better hotels you'll get, the better plane tickets you'll get. You know, it's like anything, you just build your craft, and that's the plan with it.
Do you see, when you're working on like these different gigs, you've lots of DJs that are coming up before and after you, like on a show. Is it like, do you see a difference in like the ages of these guys? Like there might be some younger lads that are getting, like I use some like Cameron Watson, who I've had in the podcast before. He still likes a few pints when he's going on, likes a Disaronno when he's DJing.
Yeah,
and then
course.
He's like, you know, there's lads who are in their 40s, 50s who are also DJing, who just come in, have a water, and then they're back out again after. Do you see there's like lots of different styles on how to approach doing a DJ set, you know?
I think I was DJing myself from a very young age across clubs here in Dublin, and I was at that phase of my life that the drinking was coming and I was partying and having fun while I was DJing. It was a great time in my life. Wouldn't change it for the world. Yeah, but I just got to the point of my life that I was like, this is just getting a little bit too much, and you're a fucking devil when you drink. Mm. You're like, sometimes I'm just a yes man and it's very hard to say no. You're stuck in parties and you don't want to go home. But I can only speak for myself, you know?
Yeah. And like, I know there's definitely, even you talk about huge music artists and stuff like that, like Post Malone is famously talked about. He used to get fucking lit before he did his shows. And then he started to feel that like, you know, he's almost getting through the shows just to get to the party afterwards.
Yeah.
And it's almost a blur of the performance. They're like, Grant, that's out of the way now. And like, it should be in his head. He's like, this is what it's about. It's not about the party afters. I should be right here for the performance.
Yeah.
And now he does them like sober, might have a beer before. And he's like, it's a totally different performance. And I feel like that makes sense. Like I've seen, you know, you see DJs that just have water when they're performing. And then I've also heard like some of the big US guys party like fucking animals right before their show, come out and do their thing and then they're gone. But I feel like you should want to get there for the performance. Like that's what you should be peaking for, you know?
I found when, it's mad because when I think back to my partying days and when I was in that prime in my days, I found I got mad anxiety before because I'd be smashing the drink and whatever else came with it over before I even got on stage. And then with the minute I got on stage, then the anxiety would kick in and I'd possibly perform the shittest DJ set of my life. And that was one of the main reasons I was like, right, that has to stop. That's not the act you want to be. It's as simple as that. It's not the person I wanted to be in life either. I had fun and I was fucking done with it. Yeah. You know?
I feel like that's a blessing in disguise. Do you know what I mean?
Of course.
And I feel like now you have a great perspective. You're not someone that's never drank.
I was like a devil, bro.
You were the man, yeah, man.
I was a devil.
Yeah.
But I had fun. I had a lot of great fun, and now it was like, it was just time to just hang your boots up.
Yeah, go ready to grind, man. All right, bro, that's the first half. I'll just cut it back and we'll go again, okay?
Lovely.
We're back in. Everyone, just deep breath, everyone. Deep breath. We're back into it. Oh, we're changing pace totally now. I love it. Okay.
Here we go.
I want to talk about the charity challenge that you did, the mountain climbing challenge.
Oh.
I remember just seeing you documenting it on your stories and stuff like that. And I was like, we'd had a conversation about you loving like going on walks, being out in fresh air and stuff like that. And I was like, that's just very much on brand for Ev to like get into doing something like that. Can you talk about the experience a little bit? I know you said it was climbing 8 mountains over 4 days. Was that the challenge you were doing? What initially got you into doing that?
Me mate Seamus, who ran the festival, who was involved in everything. he got onto me one day and just said, look, Ev, I want to try and do a 4-day challenge and climb 10 of Ireland's highest mountains. I was like, all right. He goes, would you do it with me? I was like, not a chance. No fucking way. And
no,
then
sir.
I said, you know what? I will do it because I don't go to the gym. I've never really been a gym fanatic. I've never really been a fitness fanatic. I do like getting out. I like breathing in fresh air and just being out in the open. But I've never been a fitness fanatic, right? And so I knew mentally it was going to be a big challenge for me because we don't work out around. Whereas Seamus, on the other hand, he works out 7 days a week. And he'd probably work out twice a day as well.
He's an animal.
So, player, yeah. So anyways, we done it. We done a few training sessions in Troy Lab Gym. It's an altitude peak training.
Is that with the mask on?
Yeah, bro. You have the mask on and they start reducing the oxygen as the session goes on. So obviously, I think it's at the start, you're on the highest amount of oxygen and then it goes lower but as the session goes on. Difficult. Extremely difficult. Yeah. But it put it, like me personally, I put myself to the test doing them classes because I didn't think I'd be able to do half of this stuff that I was saying. Mm. And I'm sure if Troy Lab are listening to this now that they thought the same as well, because I don't go to the gym. I'm not fit. I work on a construction site 5 days a week and that's enough.
That's it. That's fitness in itself. What was overall, like what were the, obviously when you first started, was there any, was it like three days in, are you like, fuck man, I bit off more than I can chew here.
Bro, it's after the first mountain.
Yeah.
Myself and Seamus, we drove to County Down the day before. We stayed in a hotel up there and we done a mountain called Slieve Donard, I think it was called. And we started the hike at 4 o'clock in the morning. Yeah, so bear in mind, like, we were using the shittest head torches. The fog, bro, I could not see from here to there. The fog was killing us. And after the first mountain, it was hectic, bro. We were falling. We were walking in snow and falling waist up, like literally holding on waist up. And after the first mountain, I was like, Jesus Christ, is this what we're in for?
And, like, are you straight up to be like, all right, back down, we got to go to the next one?
Well, that was it. Once you got to the top, you had a little drink and a little snack and you were straight back down. But when we got to the top of this mountain, it was like we were in a fucking snowstorm, a windstorm. There was nothing blocking us. It was just literally, we were like that. It was crazy.
Fighting the elements, man.
But we got down anyways and we drove down to Wicklow. And we done a mountain in Wicklow. What was it? Lugan na Cuile in Wicklow. And that was like army land. And it was just continuous climbing. Done that. After that, I was like, because I have a dodgy knee. My knee is just, it's just brittle, it is. Yeah. So I was like, I didn't want to say it to Seamus because I didn't want to put him in bad form. But I was like, I don't think I'm going to be able to continue this because at the end of the day, I know we're doing it for charity and stuff, I said, but my knee is a little bit more important for me because I have the rest of my life on the fucking thing.
Yeah, I can't just sacrifice my mobility. Like,
yeah, exactly. So anyways, long story short, we done that one, then we drove to Tipperary and we done Galtymore, I think it is called, in Tipperary, bro. And it was 12 o'clock, it was 8 o'clock at night we were starting Galtymore and Tipperary. Bear in mind, it was pissing rain. Like, and we had this fella, right? And we had this fella with us that was one of Seamus' dad's mates. And he was like experienced enough in climbing mountains. If we hadn't got him, he had his phone out with the maps and all on. He was taking us the right.
You'd be in the middle of
nowhere. We were a meter away of looking at a fucking 300 foot drop down the side of a cliff. And it's pitch black. Yeah. All you can see is the fog being blown up off the mountain. You're just like, what the fuck? We got to the top of that and we were like, holy shit.
You used to be brown bread. They wouldn't. No,
no, we wouldn't have done it. I don't think we would have done that mountain if it was just the two of us. And then we had to drive to Kerry then. After that, all in one day. And we stayed in the hotel. I woke up the next morning. We got these compression socks and all. They're like boots, compression boots and all. We got all them donated to us from a fitness body lab or something. And that was a massive help to my knee. So we done them every night, done ice baths in the hotel, and we just went again. Like, we completed 8 mountains out of 10 in 4 days, which was extremely mentally challenging due to the weather and conditions that you want to see the amount of times we got off track on them maps. Like, I'd be holding the map and I'd be like, we've gone a mile that way. And they'd be Seamus, he'd be like, ah, fuck's sake. Yeah. What are you doing?
Like, if you have a fucking, you know, especially when you're doing this, like, smaller, like, it's just the two of you and a mate. Like, it's different when a company's organizing this for you and, like, there's little, like, guides for you the whole way through. Like, it's just pushing through it. This is you lads figuring out.
This is two lads from Dublin
into the car.
Just into the car and they're on their merry way. But you know what? I tell you what, would I do it tomorrow? I'd definitely do it tomorrow. 100%. There was one mountain that we couldn't complete. Two mountains. One of them was Mount Brandon down in Kerry. It was extremely challenging. We were on the side of this mountain, we were halfway up it, and all you could see was up from the mountain, all you could see was down from the mountain. We were on this little two or 1 foot, like, wide, narrow path, and the wind just kept swooping us down the mountain. Me and Seamus just had to keep dropping, and I just kept looking at him. I was like, bro, this is not fucking safe.
What does that do for, like, you as a friendship, like, going through that together with one of your mates? Like, I'm sure that brings you, like, there was probably moments where you're both laughing with each other, like, what the fuck are we doing? Like,
of course, every minute of the day we laughed at each other. Every, like, even when we were starting the mountains now, we'd just look at each other, we're like, here we go again. But you know what? We done was talked the whole way. We didn't stop talking. Seamus is a type of bloke, and he's a fucking great mate to have by our side, but he's the type of bloke that is just, he just does not stop talking, and that's great for the time. Huge. Do you know what I mean? He just loves to talk. I'm a talker, but I wouldn't be much as a talker as him. He always orchestrates the conversation. So
as soon as it gets tough, I'd be the kind of person to be like, I am shutting out here. Yeah. I'm just putting it through. But you need that little bit. You need someone. Imagine doing that by yourself.
Bro, there was on the third mountain, we were doing 3 mountains in the one day. And as I said, Seamus is he's a fitness fanatic. But we got to the last mountain. There was one point I was powering through and I was very surprised I was still powering through. I looked at Seamus and he was thinking about stopping. I was like, get the fuck up. You brought me on this. Get the fuck up and finish this now. So it was challenging.
What was the charity you did it for?
Crumlin Children's Hospital.
Beautiful. Man.
Yeah, Seamus had a sister that passed, and she was in the care of Crumlin Children's Hospital. So this is what he wanted to do for them, and it was one that was kind of close to my family as well as we were growing up. So,
and that's probably what pushes you to keep going. Do you know what I mean?
Do you know what? If it's for charity, I'd do it tomorrow again. It was a great just to have that drive in you again, like seeing your man on the beach. You're helping somebody. It's all you're doing is you're helping somebody. Because why? Because you can.
And did you have a when you first finished it, are you thinking, oh, I never climbed a mountain again?
I'm ready to go again.
Good man.
I want to do the ring of Kerry there. Do all them. So we couldn't get the one up there because the wind was just extremely bad. We had a tour guide with us that to do Carron Two Hill and stuff. We paid for him. Do you know why? Because I don't know what it was. It was the highest mountain in Ireland. Mm. We were told 4 days before that from the Kerry Mountain Rescue Team to don't climb this mountain. It's not safe. There's ice up there that you will fall and you're gone.
Yeah, and so, you are gone.
So we were kind of playing up a year whether we were going to do it or not. And then we last minute, we just said, you know what, we'll ring this bloke. And his name was Morrissey Mountain Climbers, right? Yeah. If anybody's looking to climb Carron Two Hill or any of these, get in contact with him. Text me on Instagram and I'll send you over his phone number straight away. This man, I'd say, was in his 50s and he climbs 7 days a week. He brings people up and down and he is a trooper. And I swear to God, he brought us up and there wasn't one. It was dodgy. It was dangerous. But yeah, yeah. He took us the easiest way he could do it.
I feel like, particularly when you're from Dublin, you're like, all right, the Hellfire Club. Like the only things I've done, Hellfire Club, fucking Sugarloaf. Do you
That's
know what
all
I mean?
There
you're
is.
Up and down in 45 minutes.
That's all there is. Yeah. 2 days before we were going on a walk, I bought these new hiking boots and I was like, fuck's sake, I have to break these in. I'm going like, yeah. Do you know, we done 120,000 steps in 4 days. And at the first day, I done 65,000 steps. But I tried to break my boots in by doing the Sugarloaf. And I just like being pissing snow on the Sugarloaf. I was like, fuck me, this is hard even.
But like compared to Carron Two
Hill, Sugarloaf is like a nipple.
Exactly.
It's a nipple.
It's not even the same. I think if you've been like, oh no, I've done the Sugarloaf, you know, 4 or 5 times, I'll be grand. Yeah. And then you get to fucking Kerry or what, County Down, and you're like, that's a fucking mountain.
This summer now, what I want to do, I even said it to Seamus, I'd love to do it this summer, is get a tent, camp out right down the very end of Carron Two Hill. We've seen people doing it. Mm. So it's obviously done. You camp down the end of Carron Two Hill, you get up fresh early in the morning and get up and do the Ring of Kerry and then just go back home. It's fucking, for what is on our doorsteps in this country, I know it's 3.5 hours away, but fuck me.
3.5 hours, man, is fucking nothing as well. Like, there's so much out there, particularly in the lad actually who works next door here is a big camper. His name's Joe and he's probably in his 50s and he's like, you know what, man, like I was never into camping when I was younger and now the last like 10 years or so, I'll just pack up the car and I'll just go for 2 days out somewhere by myself. And the more he was talking about it, he was like romanticizing it to me. I was like, man, this sounds fucking great.
Wow.
He's like, when was the last time you sat out? He's like, I go out to spots where like not great phone signals. Like, when's the last time you just sat out in your thoughts for like a day, 2 days? And he was like, not with the missus, not with like any of your mates. Go out and just fucking be on your own for 2 days. And he was like, you'll come back with a fresh perspective of, you know, just being in your own self a little bit. And it sounded fucking unbelievable.
Yeah. Yeah,
like the only camping I've done is like festivals where you're just off your face.
It's mad because when we were doing them, it was like, because we were doing it as a challenge, it was rushed. Everything was rushed. But I feel like if I had the time, I would have taken me time doing them and enjoyed it a lot more because
10 in 10 days or something like that.
Yeah, so and mainly in daylight because at the end of the day, when you're up the top of these mountains and you're looking at the views, I didn't really get the best of views, but like some of the glimpse of what we could see were just fascinating. Yeah. It was unbelievable.
It's mad how the number one, like this is probably the thing I want to talk to you about most when I saw it on your story. The conversation you had with James Blunt, who was like a huge artist in my family, like someone my dad would have played in the car, my brother's a huge fan of.
Mad.
And he's someone who like, I would say is traditionally like quite misunderstood by the public or by his audience. Like he can be quite diverse, which I'm not quite sure why. His music is unbelievable, but he is someone that like in interviews and stuff, he's a bit of an enigma. People aren't quite sure like what he's passionate about, you know? Number one, how did that even come about? What was the story behind that?
So my brother got me and my ma tickets to go and see James Blunt for Christmas.
Class.
He was playing in the, what's that square down there here? It's like, there's a building covering the whole square. It's a Lewis stop down there. They run gigs. I don't know where it is anyway, but
I'll figure it out. I'll put it in here.
Yeah. He got us tickets to go and see James Blunt. And obviously I had made Here We Go Again. Mm. That was out and doing the rounds. But
Yeah,
so I covered a James Blunt dance track, which, like, to be honest with you, I don't think has ever been done before. Mm. I don't think anybody's even thought about remixing James Blunt's emotional...
Yeah.
James Blunt speaks art, like, in his music. But he speaks life. But anyways, so he bought us the tickets. We went there and I obviously was trying... I knew my ma loves James Blunt. Growing up... James Blunt has always been, there was a tape in my ma's car that was just always there. It was there for years. And whenever you get into my ma's car, James Blunt came on. And 1973, which is Here We Go Again, my tune was one of them tunes. So we always loved James Blunt growing up and he was just always playing. And then I was like, I'd wish my ma could meet James Blunt one day. Do you know what I mean? It'd be a good odd circle round thing to do. Yeah. So I text a guy that I knew that was working on the production team and then he texted a few people and lo and behold, someone got us in. Up into his dressing room. I think we were waiting after the gig for about an hour to actually get up to him. But we didn't have that long. I would have liked to have a lot more time with him. But we got to meet James Blunt. We had a good chat. When we were walking up the stairs, James Blunt, I heard it was mad because we were just standing outside. Me and my ma were walking upstairs. My ma goes, "You hear that?" I goes, "What?" Listening. It was my dance track of his Here We Go Again playing. They were obviously showing it to him. He was saying, "I love it and all."
That's class.
But it was just a fucking, an all-around act. Like, James Blunt is massive. He's a legend on Twitter. Mm. He's just a sound bloke and it was fucking great to meet him.
What did you talk to him about in the brief time you had? Did he bring up your song?
He talked about, we were talking about how did I come up with the idea of remixing his song. We were just chatting, general chit-chat and stuff. And I actually did say to him, I said to him straight up, because I had a few jars on me. I was enjoying myself at the gig because it was, I'm a bit of a James Blunt fan.
Who isn't?
So I was enjoying myself and I just said to him, I remember looking at him and saying to him, "I'm going to work with you one day." And he looked at me and it was just a fucking an all-round moment. It was great.
He does. He actually brought out a song. Like he hadn't put out music in a while, and then he brought out. Did you hear the song "Monsters"?
Yeah, great.
Oh my god!
But you know what? Jesus. If you actually listen to James Blunt's lyrics, you can hear the pain.
Yeah,
you can hear the pain from his lyrics, and that's. I don't really listen to a whole lot of lyrics and tunes, but I have to say I do listen to James Blunt's lyrics, and that man has been through a lot in life. A lot in life. There's a lot of trauma in his life that is translated into lyrics, and I'm happy to be listening to it.
He did a performance of "Goodbye, My Lover" in like an Oxford. It's
seen
on
it.
YouTube.
Seen
oh
it,
my
bro.
God! And like he performs. He did it. He did "Monsters" on the radio as well once. And like he emotionally like empties the tank when he performs. Like you feel every inch of it. And that's like sometimes it's probably tiring for him. And probably why he doesn't do a ton of shows is like it's part of him. He puts out when he performs. You know what I mean?
Have you watched the documentary? His documentary?
No, I haven't.
You need to watch it. Okay. You know what? Because it looks at James Blunt as coming out of the army. He's this posh kid that has come through the ranks in the army because his dad was involved in the army and he was denied by every single record label in the world because he didn't look like a pop star. They judged him on physical appearance. Even though his music was fucking lethal, they judged him on physical.
Sexy or whatever the fuck.
He's not a pop star.
Yeah.
You know, and it shows you all through the ranks. And then I think it was Atlantic Records from they got hold of him and then just plummeted. But he had to blow up in America before he blew up in England because every single record label in England dissed him because he didn't look like a pop star. Yeah, so he had to go to America and work his way up from the bottom. Serious, man.
Mad that like if you look at it now, like you've got fucking like Dermot Kennedy blows up. Like it feels like if James Blunt was out now, if he just came through now in the last like 2 or 3 years, people are like, "This guy's a genius."
Yeah.
Because that kind of like emotional, slower music, like all these lads are blowing up now and it's huge.
And they're all blown up with that style of music that he was kind of laughed at for. Yeah. But like that's it in a sense with one of the acts that I want to be, which is the Ev World act. I do have a lot of acts in the pipeline or in my head that I want to translate onto sound. A lot of different styles, but one of the acts is Ev World. I want people to be able to come and say, I want people to be able to follow the Ev World sound and go, I'm following him because he has developed a sound. You know, I don't want to be like a trendy I don't want to follow a trend and create music because it's working right now. I want to create timeless music that works 10 years, 20 years down the line.
That's James Blunt. Like.
That's James Blunt.
100%. And you were saying that, do you find, even when you started making music to now, has your music or the way you make music or the music you like to make, has that changed? Like, is it constantly moving and weaving as you go
yeah,
through?
Yeah, I find over the last 4 years, I've tried so many different styles, and I constantly revert back to what I used to do, and what I used to do is what I really loved. But I found, like, over the last 4 years, I've seen myself go through these waves, and like, as the artist Ev Wild has been involved in different organizations, I've seen myself try to produce music for different organizations that never worked. Yeah. They never worked because I'm making music for somebody else and not for what I truly love down here. And
it's funny how, like, people, when they hear, like, anyone, when they're chasing, like, hits, they're chasing, they're like, I can make a song. Like, you hear Martin Garrix, Animals, and you're yeah. like, I could do something like this. And then you start to realize that, like, you can't chase the hits. You yeah. have to just make something. Because even Martin Garrix making Animals, he doesn't know it's a hit. He's just making something that feels right to him.
Exactly.
And it grows into that, you know what I mean?
But it's not even that. It's like, you're trying to make a hit. You're trying to chase a hit. Just, like, take a hit that's a hit now. It's not, by the time you get your track started and complete and out there, that hit's gone. You know,
do you find that, do you feel it's been a benefit to you that you've always had like a day job, you've always been able to support yourself outside of music, so it hasn't put the pressure on you to have to deliver a monster hit to sustain your lifestyle?
Definitely.
You know what I mean?
Definitely. I don't know, the last time I was on the podcast with you, I think I left my full-time job then, did I? I was out full-time.
Yeah,
work.
I think you were discussing
yeah,
it.
Yeah, so since then I'm back in full-time work, but I'm kind of very lucky that I have a craft up here, that I know how to do carpentry, because at the end of the day, I was very lucky to have something to fall back on. The gigs slowed down out of a lack of consistent releases and stuff going on in the background.
Lads, I'll have Ev Wild linked below, all his links. You fucking know who Ev Wild is. So get on the fucking game. And man, I think we should fucking make this a fucking yearly thing where you get in and catch up with Ev and see what the story is.
Let's,
you know,
do it next. Who knows? Me and you might have a podcast soon.
Man, I haven't said this on the podcast yet, but I'm in the process of having my own studio. I'm going to have a little more control over the space. I'll be able to do more, like, multi, like, episodes per week.
Yeah, sick.
Some little series and
loads
shit like
of
that.
Little, even like, you know the way the world is going now, even just little series for TikTok or
little
Instagram,
shows, man.
Do you know
yeah,
what I mean?
Man. Get on my Jay Kavanaugh buzz, you know what I mean? Start banging it out. All right, lads, I'll leave Ev link down below. You know where all this shit is. And we'll see you at the top, lads.
New music coming soon. Trust me, we are back.
Get up. All right, lads.
Thanks
talk
for having me, bro.
Yes, boys.